Russia today, where we are told that communism has been defeated in every one of the individual states that used to be headed by the communists. They still have a man there who is a communist, but now he calls himself a socialist. And what you saw with the fall of communism was the greatest charade since the Greeks left a horse outside the walls of Troy, and we could go into that in great deal of detail. But you said communism has failed, and yet 1.25 billion people live under communism in China today. We have communism in North Korea. We have communism in Cuba. We have communism in many places. We have communists teaching right up here on the campus at the University of California and down in front of the City Hall, down in front of the courthouse here in Santa Cruz. You look out in front of the where the little one single-story building is, you'll find the Hugh de Lacy Square. Comrade de Lacy, a man who had 32 citations from the Senate of the state of California for his communist affiliations, is honored right here in Santa Cruz. No, the myth is that communism is defeated. America is moving rapidly towards a socialist society with ever-expanding government control over your lives. It was just by an act of providence we didn't end up with socialized medicine under Bill and Hillary, but certainly the Americans with Disability Act is a socialist program. Much of the environmental movement is all socialist, and all of it is expanding government control over our lives. Now, the people don't want it. That's why they tried to vote the scoundrels out in November. And what was the first thing that happened? Immediately, we had the lame duck session, pass GATT and WTO, which only expands government control of our lives all the more. In fact, one of the most frightening things about that was that every child will have to be registered at birth. Well, part of the program for socialism.
That was a shameful change in American democracy to have a lame duck Congress vote on a 1,200-page bill they hadn't read after they had been voted out by such an overwhelming majority.
26,000 pages. The 1,200 pages was just the summary that they printed for Congress, which nobody had read. I mean, the 1,200 pages is bad enough. We went through that. But nobody's ever seen the 26,000 pages. They're not available. And yet they voted to embrace it.
I'll grant you every point you made. You're right about that. There's, you know, a fifth of the world still lives under communism. But at the same time, it seems to me that the real power in our world, in the Western world, in the United States, is really in the hands of corporations and the rich and Wall Street who control them. And outwardly, at least, these people have embraced the ideology of laissez-faire capitalism. Do you think that they're lying and that they're really communists? These people like, the president of Disney Pictures, who was paid $215 million in the last 3 years. I find that a little hard to believe, actually. I think capitalism has done real good for them.
Well, I think first of all, you have to understand that there is no such thing as laissez-faire capitalism. Most of our capitalists, not all of them, but most of them are in favor of monopoly capitalism. And by monopoly capitalism, I mean they work in concert to discourage competition. Basically, capitalists don't want competition. What they want to do is get government to expand its control and then destroy the opposition. And you will look, as you look at most of the major markets today, there will be one major corporation that dominates everything and then a whole flock of others that are sort of tagging along behind it. Basically, I'm in favor of the free enterprise system, and I think that it really is great. I think that if you are free, though, you have to be morally and socially responsible, and you can't simply, do nothing to help mankind. You cannot be free unless you're willing to help others, because if you are only greedy, this ultimately destroys society. So basically, what you must understand, and this is one of the books that we've republished here called Foundations, Their Power and Influence, and I used to believe pretty much as you do. In other words, these wicked people have amassed all this wealth, and what we need is more government control to take care of these wicked people. Until I read a book called Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which is the story of what the Ford, Rockefeller, and Carnegie Foundations were doing. And basically, they were using the tremendous wealth at their disposal to centralize all power in Washington. Why? Because when you centralize all power in the name of fighting corporations and you control that power, then you control everything. You have a return to a feudalistic system. I think what we need to do is get back to a free enterprise system. We need to limit the power of government. And I think most of these corporations, if they had to face competition, would die on the vine. Mm-hmm. Well, basically, what you see today is that the big labor unions work in concert with the big corporations to control the workers and not give them a fair shake. This is the reality of what's going on. And if you don't believe it, you could read the book, I believe it's Capitalism and Freedom, by Milton Friedman, telling how that John L. Lewis, the AFL-CIO, he was the United Mine Workers, supposedly championing the cause of the coal workers, actually was working hand in glove with the mine owners. So every time they got an abundance of coal, and there's so much coal there, they're going to have to drop the price of it. He'd take his people out on strike. They'd go without wages for 6 months while they would get rid of the oversupply of coal. And then his workers would get maybe a little additional benefit here or a little additional benefit there. And they were able to keep the price of coal up for long periods of time by doing this. And although the average coal worker really thought he was being represented by his union, he was simply being exploited by his union. And this is what happens. You know, the Teamsters were getting payoffs from the big truck owners. And, of course, they used mobster techniques to control anybody who wanted to get out of line in the union. And it, you know, the mob just worked hand in glove with many of the big industrialists. So you have to understand that whenever you concentrate power, it's always got to be misused.
How would you see addressing the concentrated economic power that's wielded by, you know, the 1,000 richest people in the world? I mean, I read this one statistic, 358 billionaires have a combined net worth of $760 billion, equal to that of the bottom 45% of the world population.
That's probably true.
How would you address that huge naked power inequality represented by those kinds of numbers?
Well, first of all, I think that these people, most of them are quite inefficient, and most of them maintain their power only because government allows them to. You get tremendous concentrations of power with, let's say, some major corporation, and then it goes from one generation to the next. Now, ordinarily, inheritance taxes would take away most of that money, but they work out a bribe with government, and they, instead of paying, you know, half or 50% of the wealth of the corporation to government in the way of taxes, like you and I have to pay, why, they pay, you know, maybe 5% or 10%. It is because government, it can be corrupted all the time, though, that you allow this concentration of wealth. You would not have the concentration of wealth if it weren't for government. It is because we began to turn our back on our concepts of freedom, and this really went back into the 1800s, when Congress, in the name of, well, gee, wouldn't it be great to have a transcontinental railway? Let's just give a lot of special benefits to the people who build the railway to encourage them to do it. And, of course, you know, it was Leland Stanford and a lot of these guys, you know, who were giving gifts to the people in Congress, you know, and then, of course, well, I think they got a mile on either side of the railway, something like that, and they accumulated a fabulous amount of money and land simply for building a railway. Look, if it is not economically feasible to do it, it can't be done with private capital, then you don't do it. We've got to get back to a situation where we limit the power of government, we make these people be competitive in a real world, and you have fairness in our courts, you have judges who believe in justice rather than have a political agenda. This is the only solution to the problems of our society is more moral people. If we do not have a return to spiritual values, and we have people of principle in government, in our courts, in our work, in our industry, society is doomed. You can't have freedom without moral people, and unfortunately we got an awful lot of immoral people, and an awful lot of those are in key positions in government, and one of them's in the White House right now. But there's no easy solution. I'm not going to tell you right now that if I was in charge tomorrow, I could solve all of our problems. We basically are facing not only a political problem, but a very real spiritual problem, as our people have turned away from the God who gave us our freedom.
So, if given that we're at where we're at, and you know, we kind of have to start from there to fix things. In the political realm, sort of leaving aside your point that we need a spiritual revolution, which I, you know, think is an important point, and I understand that that's a key theme of what you talk about on your program. But in the political realm, just limiting the discussion to that for a moment, what do you see as being an effective strategy for citizens who would like to see a more just and competitive world, not run by 700 billionaires controlling as much wealth as the bottom half of the world, and 100 corporations paying for all the candidates on both sides in every election?
Well, first of all, we need to get people educated. Number one, you got to get people educated and willing to make personal sacrifices and become involved. And then you've got to educate others. Then we have to get people to run for political office who really are men of principle and who have a spiritual background. Now, they don't have to be look at God exactly as I do. I mean, they can be Catholic, they can be Protestant, they can be Jewish, but they have to have some moral basis to look at society. And their dedication has to be to the principles upon which America was founded, and that is that we limit the power of the central government. We take the chains off of the people, and we put it on the central government, and we probably, need to get people who swear that they will uphold the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, because that was the 9th and 10th Amendment said, look, any power that's not specifically herein given to the Congress is to be reserved to the states and the people, which means that everything that the government has done, or almost everything they've done for the last 40 or 50 years, has been unconstitutional. And we need to get people into our courts. The first thing I would do would be probably to get rid of just about everybody in the Supreme Court. I might leave Scalia there. I might leave Clarence Thomas. But most of these people have no loyalty to our system of government. Three of them come from the Council on Foreign Relations. That's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, this latest, what is his name, Breyer, and, of course, this Andrew Day O'Connor. Three people from this secret government are already on the Supreme Court of the United States. We ought to take everybody who is a member of a Mason and has sworn a blood oath to a Masonic order. They shouldn't be allowed to run for the Congress, and they shouldn't be allowed to run for the Senate, and they certainly shouldn't be allowed to run for the President if they've ever been a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. We need to get people to understand these secret and covert organizations that are out there. I mean, if you've been a member of the Theosophists or a member of some major New Age organization and have sworn an allegiance to other types of gods, you can't be a politician because we can't trust you. That's quite frankly the way it should be. We've got to get people to commit themselves in this battle. But you can't ignore the spiritual aspect of it. You can't say, well, forget about the spiritual aspect. Let's
I didn't say that, but I think there's two separate realms. We vote for some offices and we don't vote for others.
Okay, fine. But what we really need is for people to get involved. Now, what are you doing from a political point of view, Richard?
Me personally?
Yeah, what are you doing personally?
Well, I publish my own magazine, Dr. Stan.
You really do? What do you want to get the name of it or not?
No, but I'd be happy to send you a copy of it.
Okay, fine. Why don't you? I'd love to see it.
Great. And I had one other question for
you.
I rented a video recently this is on a very different topic, but it was surfing in Northern California, and I noticed you were credited in the at the end of the video. Could you tell me a little bit about how that came about? And are you a secret surfer, Dr. Stan?
You go down to surfer's point, you see that fellow there with gray hair? No, I don't. I don't even know how I happen to be credited with that. I suspect that it did. Oh, I think it is probably because they borrowed the camera that the surfing was shot with from a Monte Vista Christian school, and I had worked over there, put up part of the money for the television studio that they had at Monte Vista Christian. I think that must have been. Was that Gary's? Who was the photographer on that surfing documentary?
It's called Surfing Adventures in the Red Triangle.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that's it. Really, I'm not a secret surfer. This is something I'd never heard before.
Ah, okay. Well, thanks a lot, and thank you for an interesting program. I'll keep listening.
Okay, fine. Richard, I don't have all the answers, but I know that it's going to take a spiritual and a commitment on the part of every individual, and more than publishing a magazine, you've got to motivate people either directly or through your magazine to get involved, and they're going to have to get involved in the political process, whether it be Democratic or whether it be Republican or American Independent Party. They've got to get involved because, believe me, the people on the other side have already bought the tops of all the political parties with dollars. We've got to take it back from the bottom up and say, we don't care. We're not in this for money. We want to preserve our freedom for generations to come.
Great. Is Carol Quigley's book available? I heard, you know, in the tape he talks all about how the he'd had all these problems with the publisher. Is it now available?
Well, let me tell you, what happened was that the publisher destroyed the plates to the first half of the book, where all the really important things are take place. And the book then was reprinted by a pirate who gave the plates to somebody else, and now the plates are in the hands of a gentleman that I know, and we have it. You can get the book by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We're one of the few distributors for that. The other book, of course, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, was so significant that Carol Quigley in his book even talks about the congressional investigation of the great foundations and how this book came out. It was a shocked book, but really not shocking at all, because he and other elitists knew all along what the foundations were doing in the way of moving us towards an authoritarian society under the control of the new aristocracy. And you know, it was just sort of an insider joke that these congressmen were so upset by what they found. But the hope of the world is that the ruling aristocracy will be successful. The book available is 1,348 pages, and as I say, you can get it by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we have a special on.
Sorry, could you repeat that number once more?
1-800-5-HIV-WAR, W-A-R, or it's 1-800-544-8927. And you can ask for the special, where they'll give you not only the Quigley's book, but you can get the book on the foundations, and you can get the Carol Quigley tapes. And whether we'll give the tape that we did tonight with you on it, or whether we will give the one we recorded before, I haven't decided yet. I want to listen to this one, but I think maybe in some respects the tape program tonight was better. And who knows, you might be immortalized. You might be circulated all over the world as the anonymous Richard. I don't know. Maybe we'll just cut it down to 90 minutes and leave out this part of the conversation from the tape.
Great. Well, thank you again.
Okay. Good night, Richard. God bless you. And this is Dr. Stan here. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-800-5-TALK-TO-YOU. That's 1-800-582-5528. And so, you know, we have a few things we could cover here. Let's go ahead and just very quickly listen to Carl Klang. I think it's something we should never, never, never forget. Well, I think we'll be hearing them hopefully very, very shortly. There we go.
Just in case you don't remember, let me jog your memory. In a church they called the Waco compound back in April 93. 17 little children, all so helpless and so small.
And who do we have here on line one?
This is Tony, Doc.
Oh, hi, Tony. How you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
Okay, fine. Well, what is tonight? No, this is Thursday night.
You
were up here last night. I'll let me tell you that I did 5 hours of radio yesterday, 5 hours of radio today, and I had to get up at 4 o'clock this morning to take my daughter to the airport. And I'm just a little bit. I was beginning to think, Tony, why aren't you here tonight? And then, of course, you were here last night.
That's amazing. You can still talk.
Well, you know, what a unique opportunity to have a chance to talk to people all over the country on various subjects. We did an article, a program this morning in Alaska on the foundations. We did a debate at 5 o'clock in the state of Washington. Of course, they brought in a gay activist, the head of the AIDS committee for whatever it is, blocking public health approaches to the epidemic or something like that. And, you know, so, you know, and when you're talking to people who say, well, of course you don't want to test the general population. After all, you want to stop this epidemic by getting those people who are infected to trust the medical profession, because there's reasons why people don't trust doctors. And if we don't get trust, we can't stop the epidemic. And I say, but if you don't test, you're not going to know who's infected. Oh, well, you know the testing. If you test low incidence populations, you get 9 false positives for every 2 false, 2 positive, and on ad nauseum, the whole lobby line, and people are dying. And, you know, when I'm looking at what's potentially happening in India, they're talking about 10,000 people a day dying before long over in India. And, you know, and they're arguing over, you know, well, we really don't want to test people because we've got to, you're going to miss a certain number of people. If we started to test the general population, we might miss 1 in 1,000, but we can't test as long as it's not 100% perfect, you know. And the reply is, look, we may miss anybody with a lump in their breast. Does that mean we never look for one? We might miss with somebody who has a CA in the cervix. Does that mean we never look for them? And you know, after about an hour of that, I was so frustrated. Anyway.
Well, I had a question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
On the tape and something related to that. I'd gotten a book the other day, and it was from the 60s, and it was dealing with the Nuremberg trial. And I had never really read that much about the Nuremberg trials until I found this book, and I've been reading it for a while. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was about Hermann Göring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his father was best friends with Cecil Rhodes.
I'm not surprised. The Rhodes Group financed Adolf Hitler every step of the way, as did the American industrialists, and that's covered in Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, I'm sure you know.
Oh, yeah, but Sutton never brought that out between the connection between Rhodes' father and Hermann Göring.
I've never heard that either.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask you if you had heard about that, because it came out in the Nuremberg trial.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that come out that we never hear. And you know, it's amazing, some of the hearings that they held on the prisoners in Vietnam, you know, they would just simply turn off the cameras on C-SPAN when really important testimony was given, like the story of the colonel who was then there when Eisenhower decided to abandon 25,000 American soldiers who had been taken prisoner by the communists during the Second World War, and they decided to abandon them. And the colonel broke down and wept as he was giving his testimony, and of course it was never recorded by C-SPAN.
I know, but that you know, tied in with the tape a little bit too, you know, with Quigley talking about Philip Kerr or you know, Lord Lothian.
Right.
And
in fact, if you read Tolan's book, it's entitled The Third Reich. I think it's something of the Third Reich. And John Tolan tells about how Lord Lothian was going to visit Adolf Hitler. And there's several references there to Lothian visiting Hitler. And then, of course, you read the book about Hess's flight to England. Of course, he was going to visit Lord Lothian and Philip Kerr and the other members of the Roundtable Group because Adolf Hitler realized that they were totally sympathetic. Of course, they'd been helping him to build him up. We had to have an enemy if we were going to get a war going.
Well, that's right. You know, and I think a lot of people, you know, they really take the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateralists and a lot of these other groups, they don't take them seriously because they don't think that they're ever going to do any kind of harm. Or, and, you know, they just don't think about it. No. But if they look at the history, you know, like, with, you know, Quigley's done a wonderful job of giving, you know, us their history, which is really a miracle in itself. But, you know, if you look at your history, you see how dangerous they are. Like, just like he talked about that Zimmern fella. You know, he was totally disgusted with them because here back, even in 23, when they were blowing out the German economy, they were planning on building up Germany.
Yeah, and Zimmern.
And that's why he left.
Sure. In fact, Zimmern was there when they fought a war against Germany, and Germany was the enemy, and France was the ally. And suddenly, Germany is their friend. They're going to build them up. They're going to build up Adolf Hitler. They're going to create the best enemy money can buy. Sorry, we're out of time.
Well, okay. Well, thanks, Doc. Hey, are you going to Europe?
We'll talk about that later, but you got to come up next week and help the guys. They're going to need you, okay?
Well, when are you leaving?
Well, I don't want to say because I don't want to have the same thing happen to my plane that happened to Larry McDonald.
Oh, okay.
I'm not that important.
Oh, okay.
Good night. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
And this is Dr. Stan saying, why, be sure to be tuning tomorrow afternoon when we have Pat Patriciano.